We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildebrand, that fine gentleman over there in the heart of the Midwest, Dan Rubenstein. Sir, how goes it?
Good. I hope I'm still your favorite Dan after today.
Oh.
Your favorite podcasting Dan. I've been putting in my work for going on 14 years, but depending on how today goes, I don't know. Your loyalties may lie elsewhere.
I hate to tell you, you've never been my favorite podcasting Dan. It's always been our guest of honor today.
That's fair.
Always been our guest of honor today. Thank you. One, thank you all for stopping on by here at the Solid Verbal College Football Podcast. We are driven by Geico. If you like what we do, if you love college football the way we do, hit that subscribe button, hit that follow button wherever it is you listen to fine podcasts. We're going to be ramping up here in the next week or so, getting into preview content, helping you build, helping you prep for the season ahead. If you really want to support the show, if you really like what we do, go on out to verballers.com. That is VERBALLERS.com. That is our Patreon. That's where we offer all sorts of bonus perks, not the least of which is early access to this episode, all of our episodes, access to our Discord server, and a bunch of games and other fun stuff that we're going to offer throughout the course of the college football season. And last but certainly not least, solidverballive.com. Come and see us. We're going to be in Chicago, in New York, in Atlanta, and LA over the course of the next couple months. We'd love to see you at a live show. Tickets are available, though not as many as there were a week ago. SolidVerbalLive.com is where you can go if you are interested in any of that. But Daniel.
Yes.
We have breaking news.
Yeah, do we though? Sort of, maybe, kind of, yes.
Well, yes and no. The big breaking news is that our guest of honor today is Dan Carlin.
That's huge breaking news. Correct. Yes.
From Hardcore History. He was tweeting about college football like 2 weeks ago. All of our Verballers tweeted us and sent us emails. Bring Dan on. We're bringing Dan on. It's the crossover episode I have wanted to do since I got into this business way back when.
He goes way back in this business.
Yeah, since like 2005. He's been podcasting. He's one of the OG podcasters. He's on the Mount Rushmore of podcasting. And we found out recently that he's a big college football fan. So he's on the show today.
Ridiculous. I had no idea. I think I knew that he was a West Coast guy in some way, but I don't think I knew that about his college football fandom. So it only makes sense that the crossover episode that you didn't even know you wanted was going to happen on the Solid Verbal with Dan Carlin. I'm a big Hardcore History guy. It's a terrific show. And I just love that his ethos is, I'm putting out two a year, maybe. And that's what you get.
Love it.
And it works. And people love it, including me.
It's so good. Yeah, including me. Dan Carlin has some stuff he needs to get off his chest about conference realignment.
Yeah. Yeah. As do we all in some way. Unless you're like a Penn State fan, I guess. Life is good. If you're a Michigan fan. If you're a Texas A&M fan. Actually, I don't know if you're a Texas A&M fan. You got to deal with Texas again or Texas fans again. It's a whole new thing. But I'm positive he is going to have some things to say because he gets worked up. He gets worked up, and I enjoy that about him. Any news you want to get into, probably related to what we're going to talk about before we bring Dan on?
Yeah, it is related. So, of course, the world stopped for a minute when USC and UCLA decided that they were going to go to the Big Ten. There have been a whole bunch of rumors and a lot of speculation that has followed what the next domino might be to fall. Of course, all eyes are on Notre Dame. Notre Dame reportedly looking for $75 million from whatever their next deal looks like. I guess the bigger news is on the Big 12 and Pac-12 side, because in the immediate aftermath of those two teams joining the Big Ten, everybody was like, what's going to happen to the Pac-12 now? What are they going to do? Are all their teams going to get picked off by the Big 12? Could there be some sort of imperfect union with the ACC? There were apparently three rather long Zoom calls that took place between the Big 12 and the Pac-12 to explore various options, be it a full merger, some form of a partnership. Apparently the Pac-12 had a couple different things that they put forth, ranging from pooling rights to a scheduling concepts to that full merger that I mentioned a few moments ago. It seems as if those talks have fallen apart, that
right.
They explored it, talked it out, hugged it out, I'm sure. Didn't work out. They decided they're going to go their separate ways.
So here is me channeling my inner Brian Windhorst, who, of course, is a media star this month and really every month for ESPN. His big thing, and I enjoy his podcast as well, is any news that breaks publicly involving high-profile people trying to, and his beat is the NBA, so it's free agency, trying to assemble a business deal or trade or some sort of transaction. When news like this leaks, it's intentional. Everything is a negotiation. Everything is a negotiation. So if Pete Thamel, who I believe does a very, very good job reporting on things, very connected, is, you know, does what newsbreakers across many sports do. If he writes a story about this, and his bosses are a central figure in this.
Okay. I see where you're going with this.
It's all tactical. And so if the conversation is the Pac-12 and Big 12 a merger worth paying attention to? Does it become like a big 2.5 or a big 3 or something like that? If Oklahoma State and TCU and Baylor are playing Oregon and Washington and Arizona State, we can have that conversation and we should have that conversation. But at the same time, we have the Big 12 who are down their biggest two teams and the Pac-12 who are down their two biggest team. The Big 12 adds four teams who I don't believe were actively being courted by any other major conference. So let's not treat the Big 12 as if it's this complete phoenix rising from the ashes of Texas and Oklahoma leaving. This is a conference that was actively left behind, added teams, appears to be surviving, hired a new commissioner. But if you're looking at this pool of teams, to me, it's fun from a football perspective. But if you're comparing it against what the Big Ten will become and what the SEC will become financially and from a TV market perspective, it's way behind. Then you're going to say, then we have all these teams out west who are meaningful romantically to me. But the conference becomes less appealing without LA teams from a national perspective, especially USC. You're saying, so we're going to merge these two left behind conferences and we're going to get excited because there is hope for some B plus A minus programs ascending every so often. And I include Oregon in that. It's tough. And so whether it's a scheduling partnership, whether it's a full merger, whether it's like doing a rights partnership, but not merging, which were some of the options outlined in those Zoom calls. I don't like any of it. I just don't. It's all garbage to me.
Oh, my gosh. What a world. What a world. New Big 12 commissioner, Brett Yormark. What a week he's had.
Right.
Good Lord. Said the league is, quote, open for business.
Yes. Yes, that was the money quote.
Quote, we will leave no stone unturned to drive value. Oh, boy, for the conference. Yeah. That's some corporate speak.
Yeah, it's... And look, I think the Pac-12 has a good amount of value for the sport. I think the Big 12 has a good amount of value. They added good, strong, solid programs. It's all relative, but in their own right, I think it's going to be a really good product. But with the ACC, where it is in terms of grant of rights and how long they're locked into their deal... The Big 12 deal, I think, is after. The Pac-12 deal comes up sooner than the Big 12 deal. Is that correct?
Well, the Pac-12 wants to start negotiations immediately.
Yes.
On their media rights, yeah.
So I assume the Big 12 is at a better position right now because I think Fox is, you know, the word is that Fox is not interested in Pac-12 inventory because they're pushing so much towards the Big 10. All of these stories, I just come away thinking the same thing. That there's a lot of people out there, be it media people, fans, you know, dumb yodelers like ourselves, getting to the why, but not as much as the but should it be. I'm hard-pressed to find people who are looking at the landscape, and I understand the why. The TV markets, the money, it's too good of money to pass up. I have a hard time finding people, and again, perhaps our guest is somebody who is a good example of not this, who are looking at the immediate future and are looking at what the future layout of the sport is and saying to themselves, yeah, this is it. This is the move, everybody. This is what this sport needs. It needs bitter ACC people, bitter West Coast people, bitter people in the Southwest and West Virginia and Iowa State, bitter people that are losing their G5 programs. To, you know, if San Diego State goes to the Pac, whatever, and, you know, Houston going to the Big 12. This is the move that is good and speaks to why we love this sport. You'd be hard-pressed. I'm sure you'd find some USC fans saying, well, you know, Larry Scott didn't get it done, and so we got to do what's best for us. And USC is going to be, mark my words, a middling Big Ten program for a long time. They'll get good players. They'll lose. That's what USC does. There's just something in their DNA of disappointment. So everybody's trying to do things to get $6 more million, $9 more million, $70 more million. Yay! It's terrible. It's so bad. And all of these stories that come out with, like, I see people at, was it Joel Klatt, who I think does a very good job calling games, who's like, you guys are going to love this big national call. Okay, Joel. Okay. Yeah. And it's just exhausting. It is just exhausting. And I just want to talk about football.
Well, you will get your wish in about a month and a half.
Yeah.
Once the games are actually being played, hopefully some of this will fade into the background. It will never be fully removed from the sport, though. We are definitely down a path here where sooner or later there will be another big domino to fall, whether it's Notre Dame or Oregon or some other team that maybe we didn't expect. But nonetheless, our next guest, as I said earlier, he's got some stuff he'd like to say on this subject. We saw him ranting a bit on Twitter. We've invited him onto the Solid Verbal. Very pleased to welcome in longtime podcast host from Hardcore History, noted Colorado Buffalo, Mr. Dan Carlin. Sir, how are you?
I'm great. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me, guys.
Why don't we start at the very top? We just found out you're a college football fan. How did it start for you as a fan? Where are you at currently as a college football fan? Give us the lowdown.
Well, look, I hope I don't come off as either ignorant, which I certainly might, or vindictive, considering the state of things. So I apologize to everybody. I'm going to probably be like the old guy who's saying, get the hell off of my lawn. When
you're in good company. Football. Yeah.
Okay, well, that's great to hear. I've been a college football fan. I was trying to figure it out before we had this conversation. It's been like 50 years. I'm from Southern California. My step family all went to USC. My blood family all went to UCLA. And so this conference realignment thing is, it actually feels surreal to think of both of those schools leaving what's now the Pac-12. It was the Pac-10 when I was a kid. It was the Pac-8 once upon a time.
It's the Pac-10 again, Dan.
Yeah, for now, right? nothing is in stone anymore. This is the funny thing about college football, too, is that, and this is what the TV networks don't understand or don't care about because they're so short-term, the motivation is so short-term, but I mean, this is a thing that's connected to tradition, right? And when I can look back at all of these games and all of these things that we went to, the idea of having those two schools in the Big Ten or whatever they call the Big big now. I can't get my mind around it. So I've been a college football fan pretty much my whole life. I used to be a multi-sports fan, and I'm pretty much down to this. So the vindictiveness comes in with this feeling like the last sport that I'm into is in the process of changing to such a degree that I won't be able to appreciate it. But that's the backstory. I mean, then I went to Colorado 1986, I arrived there. We had just been terrible for quite a while. And then all of a sudden, while I was there, got good. And the year after I graduated, you know, won a share of the national championship. So that'll make you a fan for life right there.
No, for sure. I want to go back for a second. So you said you're down to this. You're down to college football. I've listened to your show. You're not exactly skimming the surface. You're doing 5-hour episodes. So what are you doing on the college football side of things? Like, are you reading on the academic level? Are you just kind of observing from afar as a fan? Like, describe for us to some extent how you follow the sport.
Well, that's the kind of fan I am, just what you described. I mean, I'm going to read everything. I'm going to go to message boards. I'm going to talk to people in the administration. I mean, you know, I get into it as much as I'm allowed to get into it, right? We all run into these walls sometimes where you can't find anything more. And that's when you start skimming the rumor mills out there, trying to find any little, you know, piece of information that might let you divine where things are going a little bit. But I don't know where things are going. I just know that to me, this doesn't look good. I don't know how you might fix it, but I think what we're seeing here is a transformation of the sport that will, for all intents and purposes, kill it. And I don't think that the television networks that are involved in this are taking enough flack for this, because I do think that they're motivated by very different things than people who have the long-term interest of the sport in mind. So I feel I'm almost in mourning a little bit for the whole sport. And I know a lot of young people, maybe, and especially if you're fans of some of these schools that have been successful under the current system and would seem to be the kind of schools that would be successful under any new system, the Ohio States, the Alabamas, those kind of places. But I don't feel like that represents how the majority of people who went to Texas Tech or who went to, you know, North Texas or Colorado or Washington State or any of those schools feel.
Did it catch you off guard?
No, because I've been waiting for the axe to fall for a while. I mean, I think you could see that things were heading in this direction. I do feel like every time the rumor was coming up that there was going to be another conference realignment or something big was happening, you know, you would just start to shudder again because you knew that it wasn't just going to be that domino that was tumbling, that anything that happened was going to be part of a larger situation that was going to once again change the sport in a way that for traditionalists like yours truly, and I do a show called Hardcore History, so I'm a traditionalist, that you just knew it wasn't going to be good for you.
Yeah, one of the things that I like to talk about, and Ty, I think, feels similarly, though Ty's in a weird place because he's a fan of both Penn State and Notre Dame because of how he grew up.
Who will both be fine, by the way.
Who will both be absolutely fine, whereas I, as somebody who grew up on the West Coast, and that was who I had access to with TV, you know, watching Pac, then Pac-10 games, then going to the U of O, that, you know, there's something romantic and obviously a bit of a bummer to me about the way this is all, the direction this is all heading. Is there something about the sport as it stood at one point that you felt was perfect? Like that was there a time, because we can always look back and say that those were the good old days, but there were always problems with the sport, whether it was with the postseason, whether it was with the organization of the sport, whether it was, you know, how much we could or could not actually see games for free on TV. Was there a time where you're like, okay, they have it figured out? Or is this sort of chaotic nature kind of interwoven into the sport, like I think we all think a little bit?
Well, you know, it's funny because I think people like yours truly are part of the problem over the eras, because I remember when Colorado won its share of the national championship, we shared it. It's not even shared it. So I don't even know how you call it when you have the AP and the right. I mean, it was a strange system, and it was the kind of system where you would turn around afterwards and go, well, this sucks. There ought to be a national championship, right? And it's almost like the idea of be careful what you wish for, because I feel like the criticisms that have been leveled lately that somehow this pursuit towards a national championship or a playoff system has devalued what used to be a good season for a lot. In other words, unless you get the brass ring at the end, nothing else matters. And I feel like I wish I'd understood as a younger person how that sort of trend was going to kill so much of what made the sport so good for so many schools that were never going to either sniff a national championship or were only going to do it, you know, very, very rarely. I look back on it now and wish that there had been, let's just say the NCAA had been a better organization for handling this. I just think football especially ended up being so valuable and there was so much money involved that an organization like the NCAA just was not up to the task of fending off all of the different things that were going to push and pull the sport in the kind of directions we're in now.
So what is it about college football then? You talked about being a multi-sport fan and then coming back just to college football, and we all know about its flaws. So what is it about the sport that sort of sold itself to you as the one remaining thing to follow and care about, even with all of these flaws?
Well, I think obviously, and this is, again, something I don't think that the TV networks either understand or care about, maybe, is that you end up with a rooting interest. And it's one kind of rooting interest when you're a kid and you happen to be from Los Angeles and maybe USC or UCLA are the equivalent. Well, they're not the equivalent. They are the local teams. But then when you go to a university, you're invested in a whole different way, right?
Sure.
Yeah, it's part of your brand, if you will. And I find that, you know, the pro sports don't have that same kind of appeal to me because you can shift pro teams all you want, but you know, you're a Colorado Buffalo for life, or you're an Oregon Duck for life, or you're a Penn State Nittany Lion for life. I mean, there's a different sort of a connection to the team than you have as just a fan who says, you know, I like the Baltimore Orioles. That's going to be my team, you know?
Right.
So I feel like right there you have something involved that makes this so different than the equivalent of like a minor league NFL team. Because here's the thing, nobody is clamoring to see a less polished, less talented version of the NFL. There's something else at work with college football, and they put it under the umbrella of tradition, but I think it's so much more than that. And I think that's what the networks, for example, that are funding all of these changes and these dominoes falling don't understand. And they're going to kill the golden goose because they don't care about what the golden goose looks like in 25 years. None of the people making these decisions are going to be making these decisions in 25 years. They're incentivized on a much more short-term sort of a calendar, and they don't care where the sport's going to be a generation from now. But several of us, you know, maybe you guys too, have been watching this sport for about a generation, so we have a different interest than they do.
Will you still care if Colorado is, you know, quote unquote left behind, if they don't end up in the Big 12, if they don't end up in a, you know, a growing Pac-10, 12, 14, whatever? And you've said that you're sort of made peace with the fact that it's not about the ring. It's about the season. It's about the journey of success over the course of the fall. So if Colorado is not in a major place, a quote unquote major place conference wise, but they go 9-3, they look sharp on offense, they beat a good team, will you be satisfied even without the sort of identity of your team being in, you know, the capital S show?
I don't want, I see that again, this to me is what the TV networks don't get when they play this college football thing the way that they play,
right?
You know, the NFL or NBA basketball. I want to play Nebraska, right? The things that I care about. Let's put it this way: I'm a huge college football fan, but I don't watch Alabama, right? I don't watch Michigan. I don't watch Notre Dame. I watch USC. I watch Oregon. I watch Colorado. When we were in the Big 12, I watched Texas. I watched Oklahoma. There's a regionalism to this that they don't get. They think, you know, we're going to get the Georgia, Florida, you know, biggest outdoor cocktail party thing, and everybody's going to want to watch. I would pick Colorado, Nebraska 10 times out of 10 because that's my interest. And that's the part that they're killing without realizing that they're killing it. And here's the thing. When you go to any of these small schools, I mean, if you're somebody who went to, and it's not a small school, but I mean Boise State, you want to watch Boise State, or you want to watch BYU play Utah, the TV networks don't care that much about that, but I guarantee you the people in a place like Utah are absolutely fanatics about that game. So this is why college football doesn't fit so well into the template that these television networks are so used to dealing with, and that's why they're going to hurt the sport while treating it the way that they, you know, it's like a Mad Libs game, and they're treating it the way they treat all these other sports, and it doesn't fit that Mad Libs template that they're using.
Dan, the tweet that set our listeners off was one of yours back on, I I think it was July the 2nd, where you compared college football disintegrating before our very eyes like victims of Thanos. I'm wondering if you've got a historical comp for where you feel like college football is headed, how it's being run, you know, how the playoff is set up, how you see this going, because you are a student of history.
Oh, sure. And I can think of a college comp and a pro comp. The college comp is college basketball. There's no way to explain to a young person now the difference between college basketball now and college basketball in 1980. Because, you know, and you can see, I mean, the fact that you don't have, I mean, I was listening to a sports talk show host talk about the difference in the sport by having people come and do like a one and done, as opposed to the era where a team like Duke or North Carolina could have an entire team laden with senior talent who'd spent 4 years in the program and development. You're never going to see that again because of the changes in the sport. And then the pro comp would be baseball. You look at baseball in 1974, and it is the biggest sport in America. And again, it is hard to tell young people today how big it was. The World Series, which is, you know, could play out to seven games, the country stopped. The country stopped. You can't even imagine that today. But of course, in 1974, we had yet to see free agency play out the way it did. And I mean, here's the comp. I used to be able to tell you in 1974, I'm 56 years old, 1974, I could name for you the starting lineups of every single team in Major League Baseball off the top of my head, because they didn't change that much.
Yeah.
I mean, the LA Dodgers had the same starting lineup for a decade, right? The minute you get free agency into that, that changes every year. And what happens is you lose the connection between these players who were like family members. I remember listening to Art Donovan from the Baltimore Colts talk about what it was like to be a Baltimore Colt in the community back then in the 50s and early 60s. And he says, you remember the community. They knew you. They knew your family. I mean, and there's a, you know, that's what's funny too, because that was when you could treat the NFL a little like we treat college, in the sense that you had this connection that now people come, people go. It's a free agency thing. They're mercenaries. And look, this is the problem too, because I happen to be one of those people that feel like a lot of these decisions that have been made to increase the players' ability to get better contracts, and I mean, I think all that is probably much more fair and much more just. But that doesn't mean it's the best thing for the sport overall. Does that make sense?
One of the other questions that I had jotted down here was, does college football need a czar? What fixes this problem? Is there a fix for this problem? Is there anybody that could fix this thing, given the way it's set up?
Well, I mean, I tried to think about that a little bit before coming on here, because I'm one of these people that thinks you should try to, even if they're stupid, offer some solutions that at least open the door to some possibilities. And you know, obviously, like I said at the beginning, I hope I don't come off as an ignorant fool with some of this stuff. But part of where I see the problem is not the idea of players getting paid. I mean, I always thought not having stipends was a joke. But maybe the way that it's being done, and maybe this plays to your point about not having any kind of oversight that could try to balance out the interest of the sport and the interest of the players in the sport. But I mean, for example, imagine that instead of having this being done on a school-by-school basis, where NIL and paying your players is something that one school can offer as a competitive advantage to get a player over another school, what if you just, you know, had a pool that was the pool for the entire sport, and every player in Division I got the same percentage, right? So everybody gets 25 grand or whatever it is, so that instead of being able to say, hey, we're Michigan and we'll pay you as a quarterback more than Alabama will pay you, you're going to get paid and you're going to get money, but it's not going to be a competitive advantage whether you go to Michigan or Alabama. In other words, we have a system here where that's not going to be something where the schools with the most money, the most fan interest, then, I mean, let me give you an example. And this is not to change the subject, but it's to show you the position that a school like Colorado's in right now, right? We have a situation where obviously it's hard for us now to get fantastic players because we're not going to be able to pay them or create systems where they're compensated the same way. But, you know, you still hope. You say, okay, well, maybe we'll get lucky. We'll find a diamond in the rough. We'll coach him up. But that's not what's going to happen, because every time that happens now, as soon as a player gets coached up to the point where other people might want them, other people take them. So you've become
the Pittsburgh Pirates, right?
Yeah, you're a farm league for the better. So in other words, so this is what I meant about it killing the sport, because that kills your incentive, because it kills your hope. You have no reason to care. You don't even want players to get very good, because if they get very good, you'll lose them. So, I mean, this is what I mean about killing the golden goose while trying to make this the NFL. And look, at this point, I think the sport would be better off if those schools that want to be, you know, I'm not sure what the right word is. I don't want to be. But I mean, some of these places are so institutional minded as an academic institution that there is only so far they will go, and there are other schools that will go as far as you have to go to compete. I wouldn't have a problem separating those two into two different leagues. The problem that I think the networks are going to find is that when you've got schools like Oregon facing Oregon State getting the kind of attention in a state like ours that gets, that the networks are going to go, now, wait a minute, why aren't more people watching, you know, Alabama, Michigan, where all these little local regional rivalries are still getting a lot of eyes? Because it's a little like minor league baseball. Nobody cares about minor league baseball in a national sense, but you go to these communities that have strong minor league programs, and the locals love going to the games, and they're popular. So, I mean, I think what we're talking here is you're going to see a disconnect between what we used to call the small schools with a large football program attached to them, and schools that are just not going to go that far. And Colorado's one of those. I mean, there's going to be a point where they just go, listen, this is too much money, too much effort, too much time, too much trouble for the payoffs. And I think a lot of schools are going to feel that way.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Was there, and you mentioned the inevitability of it all when you were looking at the sport a few years ago, that it's just there's too much money on the line and we see the direction things are heading with realignment. Is there something about human nature that, you know, a set of regional conferences or tribes or whatever, because it is a tribal sport, that if you look back in the annals of history or whatever, we don't have to look at, you know, going back to, you know, the Shogun, we don't have to do that. But is there a human nature element to this where as soon as resources become higher and as soon as there are just too many dollars on the table, people are not going to be happy with enough? There is that sort of more quality to we could be getting more, we could be making more, we could be growing bigger, we could be destroying our rivals, and people are not happy with the status quo. Even if everybody's happy, nobody's happy. Is there like a human nature element to the way that this sport is heading?
Well, sure, but it's not an individual human nature element. It's a collective human nature element, right? It's lots of people all at once. So, for example, let's say you said we're going to have, you know, my stepfather went to USC, and there's a certain, I hope the USC fans won't hate me here, but there's a certain arrogance with USC. And he used to say, you know, we should just have a super league where just the best teams play each other, you know. But here's the problem. Let's just say you take Ohio State and you say we're going to put them in a super league with Alabama and some other schools, right? But you don't get to play Michigan. anymore. And you don't, you know, in other words, you take away the Colorado-Nebraska rivalry in the Michigan-Ohio State sense. I think that people then would say, well, wait a minute. I love the idea of being in this league where we're playing the best and we get a national championship, but there's nothing that compares to how we feel when we play Michigan. And that's the part that's different. I think when you take an ESPN or a Fox Sports, they look at this like the pros, like, wouldn't it be great to have the best teams play each other for a TV sets? But they don't understand that's only part of it. Yes, you'd love to be in there playing the best teams, but at the same time, in this sport, the hatred and the adrenaline rush that you get when you're playing historic rivals. And I mean, let me give you an example. We left the Big 12. Colorado left the Big 12. I think it was like 2011, right? So Colorado and Nebraska stopped playing each other. And then the rivalry, we had some non-conference set up the last couple of years, not last year, but a few years before that, a home and away game with Nebraska. And all of a sudden, I hadn't felt, and I'm not the only one, a lot of Colorado fans and some Nebraska fans too felt the same way. I hadn't felt that way since we left the Big 12 because... Yeah. You know, we're supposed to be Utah's rivalry. I like Utah, right? I respect Utah. I like the way they play football. I don't hate Utah. But Nebraska, I hadn't felt that way since we left the Big 12. And I remember after the second game, I was so jacked. I just thought, now this is what's been missing, right? And this is what they don't understand. Now, don't get me wrong. The networks will sell this as a historic rivalry, you know, as part of their promotions. But they don't act like that when they're making the financial decisions. They act like they want that Super League that my stepfather wanted without understanding that there is no real demand for NFL light. And in fact, here's how you know this. If you started and I think there is one, so this is my ignorance showing, so I apologize, but if you had a minor league NFL system the way you have a minor league baseball system, but you kept college football also, nobody's going to watch the minor league system, even if the minor league system has all the best players, because right. College football is not about all the best players. It's about Colorado, Nebraska. It's about, you know, Notre Dame, Michigan. It's about those kind, right? Florida, Georgia. I mean, it's a different, you know, Auburn, Alabama. The tradition is what's different. And if you kill the tradition, you don't understand how much of a support pillar that is in the whole sport. You're going to bring down the whole roof.
You mentioned how weird it was that Colorado shared a national championship, and they fixed
Georgia
it.
Tech, by the way.
Georgia Tech. They, whoever they is, different groups of people, have attempted to fix that. Right now we have the college football playoff. It's at four teams. Before that, of course, the BCS. Do you watch postseason football that does not involve Colorado or West Coast teams out of sheer curiosity because of your one-time desire to name a one true champion?
Nope. Don't watch it at all. Don't have any care at all for SEC football. Don't care about Big Ten football. And yet I'm a rabid fan. So how weird is that? Because if you're an NFL fan, you care about, because all the teams are part of the same thing, right? As far as I'm concerned, Alabama's not in our conference. They're not in our league. They're in a different league completely. I don't care about them at all.
I'm on that same page. I watch it because this is my job to watch it, and I love college football. But I've long said the point of college football is basically late August through early December, late November. And I think people are coming around to that more. I mean, I don't care about TV ratings. I think they're sort of not a true indicator. But I think more and more people are trying to get more locked in on the season of football itself, what their teams are doing, what the conference is doing. And I think you're right. I think there is something, and maybe you can speak to this further, but what about the TV networks not understanding or trying to push this into sort of a, you know, the circle college football into a square peg. What is it about the TV experience? And do you even like the TV experience of college football in 2022?
Oh, I think, listen, some sports are live sports in terms of you can't compare to seeing them live. Others are really TV sports. Boxing is a TV sport. I've been to boxing matches and you can't see anything, right? But on TV, it's a whole different thing. Football is a TV sport for me. I want to see replays. I want to see, you know, when you go to the game, you can't see any of what's going on with the ball and, you know, in someone's hand. I mean, so the TV experience is very important. But I think when you look at how I mean, for example, if you're an Alabama fan, are you watching the Apple Cup? Are you dying to watch the Apple Cup with Washington and Washington State, or the Civil War with Oregon and Oregon State? You watch what you care about. And I think this is what the networks don't understand either, is that we're not in this to watch the best football available, or we will watch the NFL. We have certain interests, and those interests are not national. This is a You know, and you mentioned it yourself, like this is maybe why the regular season itself is becoming more important, because by the time you get to the point where we're in talking about playoff stuff, we're down to a few teams, and it's usually the same few teams, or, you know, maybe you have an interloper. But the point is that if you're a regional person, by that point, your team's not in it. You don't care. I mean, look, I know that there are especially people with betting interests who love all these big teams that are going, but for most people that I talk to, they care about their conference, they care about their school. And don't get me wrong, I mean, you love playing those teams as part of your non-conference schedule. When Alabama plays Colorado, I'm going to watch, right? And I'm going to be really into it.
Right.
But that doesn't happen very often. So normally, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it might as well be a different league. And so, yes, it is a television sport, but the people that are putting this on and paying the money to buy the rights to this, they have very different interests than those of us who are college football fans, right? And their interests are not to promote, you know, North Texas and their fans. Their interests are to get the top schools together that are in certain cities that have large viewing audiences, lock those up. And let's remember something else. It's not even so much about that. You forget that there's stock involved here, that these are companies that are publicly traded often, and that to be able to say we've got the next 5 years locked up in the SEC is something that will raise your stock price. And I mean, this is a whole thing where what the fans of this sport want, or what the health of the sport demands, is it's not even on their radar, right? Because they don't get incentivized to care about that. And I understand that, but it means that you and I, we have no say in this at all. There's no NCAA anymore that looks out for the sport as a whole, and they were falling apart for at least a decade before all this happened. So we're really in the Wild West right now, and what's going to happen is that there's going to be schools that will say, as there always have been, we will do whatever it takes, and that's going to leave a lot of other schools behind when whatever it takes is so crazy you can't even pretend that you've got an educational mission anymore with a lot of these schools. I mean, remember, the money doesn't go back into the English department, right, or the history
right.
department. So it's not like you could say, hey, a great football program means that all of our students in the non-sports things are going to do better. It does. Now, you may say, as they do, that sports is the front porch of these universities and it's a wonderful selling tool and all that. But that's becoming a really hard thing to claim now when all of these schools have more students than they have spots already and those kind of things. So I have a kid in college right now, and I can just tell you, it has never been harder to get into colleges. It has never been more there are schools that we used to tease people for, or you went there. Nowadays, going anywhere is a bit of a coup. So I don't think schools need that sports front porch thing as a way to promote going to the school, because I don't think they're hurting for students. Maybe that's a good way to put it.
What does the decline of the sport realistically look like to you? It's obviously not going to just close up and there are going to be no more games and no more teams and no more programs. But if we're pointing to this event or this series of events with conference realignment as the de facto death of the sport, or the de facto death of the sport as we know it, if that is indeed the case in the next 10 or 15 years, if this is the beginning of the precipitous decline, is it programs folding up because they don't want to spend the money and spend the time to compete with the best of the best financially and on the field? Is it a TV ratings thing? Is it an attendance thing? Is it a donation to the program and school thing? What is the indicator? What is the metric by which you could see the sport dramatically declining?
In some ways, it looks like baseball to me, like I mentioned earlier, because here's the thing. If you went to a television executive and you said baseball is not what it used to be, they're going to say to you, what are you talking about? The players make more than they've ever made. They're bringing in more money than ever. You know, the sport's very healthy. But you would say, but nobody, life doesn't stop anymore for the World Series. It is nowhere near what it was to the country as a whole. The sport doesn't mean what it used to mean. They're working on a different metric, right? They don't care about that. That's not what matters to them. So when you say, what's going to happen to these programs? Well, I can tell you that there are a lot of schools, Colorado's probably one of them, actually, where the educational side of the school has a little bit of resentment for the sports side of the school. And that, believe it or not, depends on where you go, I guess. But that has a huge impact on support and how far schools are willing to go. I do think that there's going to come a time when a lot of schools are going to say, look, we're not going to play that game because we can't. So we're going to play against a bunch of schools who also have decided that they can't play that. I mean, it's almost like like, instead of dropping down to like what we used to call Division II, maybe what it means is that you're going to have a Super League like my stepfather always wanted, and then you can get back to where the other schools can play each other and try to keep some remnant of what we used to like about this. And that's when I think that you're going to see how interesting and how unusual college sports are compared to pro sports, when those things are actually more successful in a fan interest sense. They may not pull in the same dollars, they may not pull in the same ratings, and part of that problem too is, remember, when we're talking about a regional sport where, you know, Dan and I care about the West Coast, right? But the networks want games that have national appeal. But this is not a national appeal sport the way it's built from the ground up, right? So maybe that's the dichotomy I should have brought up right at the very beginning. It is a sport with strong regional ties that is being run or that is being driven by entities that want strong national appeal. So maybe that's the disconnect there.
Well, and it's also a vicious cycle, because more money from the networks means that programs have more money to spend, presumably on coaches. That's how you end up with Lincoln Riley at USC.
Right, and assistant coaches, which not enough people pay attention to.
Yep.
Right. I mean, the money fuels the whole thing. It just sort of elevates it to an extent where, as you described, it makes it really difficult for programs that are on a little bit of a tighter budget. We can use Colorado as an example. You hope they don't turn into the Pittsburgh Pirates, because that wouldn't be fun. But it is one of the comments that we've gotten pretty frequently, Dan. People who are concerned, who maybe don't root for Alabama or Ohio State or Notre Dame, but, you know, Pitt fans, NC State fans. These are programs that have done really well, and fans are rightfully concerned that something could happen here that could change the game for them.
But you bring up a great point, because this is not about a few schools dropping out that can't compete. This is about almost everybody dropping out who can't compete, except for 24, 30 schools or something. Right. I mean, this is everybody. And so that's what makes this so different, because if it was just my school or your school that wasn't going to be able to play, you know, against the big boys, okay, well, whatever. But this is everybody's school except for a few. And look, let's be honest about some other things, too. There were some states here that followed this stuff rabidly. I remember Colorado played one of those early season games years ago that they used to have. I think it was either the Pigskin Classic or the Kickoff Classic. I want to say it was 1990. I think it was 90. It was the national championship year. And we played Tennessee at Anaheim Stadium, I think it was. And look, this is nearer to Colorado in California than Tennessee. But when you looked in the stands, there were a few Colorado people and a sea of orange, right? What it really showed you was this is a level of support, because these are not all Tennessee graduates. This is the state that just adored their Alabama's similar. I mean, you don't get that in Colorado. Colorado is a Denver Broncos state, right? And the university is sort of a little bit of an afterthought. Oregon's different because we don't have a pro football team here. But I guess what I'm saying is that some of these states can support these teams at a level and would be outraged if the University of Alabama academic department complained about how much of the resources of the school were going to the sports programs. It's the exact opposite at most of these schools that are working on much, much tighter margins and that don't have that level of support. So, I mean, in my mind, that's almost your new Division I and Division II separation, right? I mean, look at Notre Dame. Imagine if they decided that what they have to put in the football program is hurting academics too much, and they're going to focus on academics and downgrade the football program, for example. How do you think the alumni are going to feel about that?
I wanted to ask you about Notre Dame, because you're a guy who has a good sense of history, obviously. I'm curious, if you are doing hardcore college football, let's say, I don't know, 20 years from now, throw a number on it. Is Notre Dame a protagonist or an antagonist in your story 20 years down the line, given presumably all the leverage they hold for the future of college football?
Oh, I don't know. I think, it's interesting. Notre Dame's one of the few national brands, right? So, I mean, we had talked about this weird dichotomy between something that is a localized or a regional sport at its core, but this trend towards networks wanting a national brand. Well, that's the national brand, right? I don't know. I think if I'm Notre Dame, I stay the way I am because of the leverage that you have. You'd almost, as a non-Notre Dame fan, you'd almost like to see him pick a conference and be done with it, right? Just so that this isn't hanging over our heads anymore. But I do think they're in a unique place, and I think if you're a Notre Dame fan, the flexibility that gives you as this unique brand is really important. But let's say Notre Dame had, and I can't even imagine this happening, but let's say they had 10 bad seasons in a row. You know, if you're in a conference like the Big or the ACC, you're still getting your percentage that you share with the other schools. But if you are a brand that makes money off individual agreements with a network based on your brand, and your brand has 10 losing seasons in a row, well, listen, you can still pull the Newt Rockne, you know, traditional thing if you want to, and you're still a national brand because there's a lot of people out there who love Notre Dame. But I mean, if you go, you know, if you go 0-10 or 0-13 for several seasons in a row, does that mean your next contract negotiations that come up with the TV network, you're not going to get as much money as last time? So, I mean, I don't know. I like I said, as a non-Notre Dame fan, we're just tired of it. It'd be nice if they pick a conference and be done with it. But otherwise, I don't care, because I don't think, for example, Notre Dame isn't responsible for the various dominoes that have been tumbling. They're not responsible for Texas and Oklahoma leaving the Big 12. I mean, they're probably not responsible for USC and UCLA leaving. Although, how interesting is it, guys, that UCLA apparently and allegedly did not even ask the Board of Regents for the University of California, didn't tell them they were even thinking about
this?
Yeah, that, you know, it would be very interesting if they said to UCLA, you think you have the right to leave, but you don't, and we're canceling it. They can't say anything to SC, but can you imagine if it's just USC going into the Big, and then it's one school on the West Coast? It's going to be very interesting. I kind of hope they do, just for the chaos it would cause.
Or if the regions say, okay, but pay Cal $20 million a year as a forfeiture, as a tax.
Or you have to take Cal, right? You can't leave without Cal.
It's probably not going to happen in that way, but I can fantasize. I think it would be wonderful just to throw an ugly wrench into this. Okay, so if you're online and you are reading and you are consuming, and this is what we do, and so we have our own answer, but other than the people standing to make the money, the most money, do you get the sense that people like this? And people's obviously a very difficult term. But do you feel a sense of enthusiasm from non-West Coast people, from Midwest people, Southern people, from writers? Like, a lot of people are very happy to explain why this is happening, that the money is too good, that, you know, the opportunities are too vast for, you know, TV networks and, you know, athletic directors and presidents. But do you get a sense of enthusiasm from fans, from, you know, sort of the people invested in the sport on an emotional level?
No, I don't think anybody's really excited about it. And I asked my brothers, who both went to USC after the news broke. And of course, like everybody, I mean, they were stunned. I mean, USC has been in, I mean, this is a conference where the original members have been around for so long, you can't, I mean, it's like more than 100 years, right? And the next day I talked to one of my brothers, and he said, well, we didn't have a choice. He said, when you look at where the money's going, I mean, he says, literally, their hands were forced. And I think that's how a lot of people feel. It's a game of musical chairs. Everyone's afraid that when the music stops, they're not going to have a place to sit. That's a very different motivation than, heck yes, we're so excited that this is finally happening. I think a lot of people feel like this is killing what they love about the sport. But at the same time, we all want to hold on to some of what we love. And we feel like if you don't end up in a conference that's going to have enough money to make you competitive, that all of a sudden, you know, you're going to care even less about your team because nobody else cares about your team. I think people just feel it's almost like a pressure to stay alive rather than this real excitement of better competition, more money, a better chance at a national championship. Because how many people went to schools or root for schools that have a decent chance at being part of the national championship discussion anyway? It's one of the things I love about college football is that there's so many teams, that we have so many different kind of weird offenses that people try. And so, I mean, there's so much fun in the sport that you don't get in a more homogenized league that has less teams and more standardization. And I feel like, once again, that's something the networks don't understand either, that the diversity. I mean, I love that Air Force runs, you know, their version of the option, right? Sure. When I was a kid, the University of Oregon, when I was looking at it from Southern California, ran what we thought was like a gimmicky offense. It was a pro-style offense, but that was gimmicky at the time. But you love that because there's a diversity in the sport that just makes it fun to watch if you're into the X's and O's like a lot of us are. I feel like all of that's going by the wayside. I mean, and at a certain point, it's going to get to the place where I just want those big schools to leave and just say, you know what, you guys have a very different priority than the rest of us. How about you create the Super League and then let the rest of us have a really good time playing Oregon State, you know, that having some ACC schools and traditional rivals. I mean, where's a school like Boston College or any of these schools in the Northeast fit in any of this, right? I just feel, and you know, especially when these networks are so concerned with TV markets, I mean, New York City, that's not a college football. No. I mean, I just feel like this is all, it's very similar to what's happened with the stock market, where once upon a time you used to buy a really good blue chip stock and sit on it for years, and that was the way you went. Now it's just we churn it at the next quarter, and everything is very short term oriented because that's what you're incentivized to do. You're not going to say to somebody who's in a position right now at one of the big schools and just say, listen, what we really care about is the health of this whole thing 15, 20, 25 years from now. That person's not incentivized to think like that. Their job is to make sure that while they're in that job, they do well. I mean, this brings us to maybe we could talk about, although I don't want to slam any individuals personally, but it is a wonderful object lesson about how important management at the top is. Look at what happened to the Pac-12 before and after a guy like Larry Scott. Yep. Right. I mean, literally, he took over a conference that was doing great and left it on death's door. Now, look, he's not the only person responsible. There were people that let him stay in his job. Right. He walked away with a lot of money, but he destroyed the conference, destroyed a more than 100-year-old conference, and got away with it with the support of a bunch of athletic directors, most of whom are not even there anymore. That's a wonderful lesson right there that who you have calling the shots can make or break you.
It's true. It's absolutely true. I wonder, because college football doesn't just affect fandom publicly, but it affects fans online anonymously. And if you go on message boards, you can see the sort of brain rot that people have from recruiting, from college football fandom, from coaches, from coaching buyouts, from whatever is happening in the sport. And I say that lovingly because these are our listeners and we are some of those people as well. How do you consume the sport? Are you a paying message board member somewhere? What do you read? What do you listen to?
Oh, boy. It depends. Like, if it's June, there's not much going on in my mind. But then all of a sudden, you know, as the season approaches or as signing days approach, and, you know, signing day used to be so much fun. Now it's, you know, not so much fun anymore. I mean, all these things that used to motivate you and keep you going are just not what they used to be.
Sure.
And that's what I mean about killing the sport and turning it into baseball. Baseball may make more money than they've ever made before, but nobody cares about it the way they did. In 15, 20 years, college football may be making twice as much money as it makes now, but it's not going to be what it is today, and most people aren't going to like it as much as they did. Now, that may not matter if your players at the top schools making $1 million to be a quarterback at Alabama or $1 million to be a quarterback at Ohio State or something, and better for the players in that sense, certainly, but killing what we love about the sport and destroying the underpinnings. I haven't watched a baseball game in years. I used to not miss baseball games when they were on locally. So that's a perfect example, I think. I don't watch boxing anymore, but boxing is a good example, too, of what happens when you don't have someone at the top controlling the whole thing. I remember I interviewed when I was on the radio years ago, Charlie Steiner, the sportscaster, and we were talking about boxing, and I was talking about needing some sort of an entity to sort of set the rules and make sure the good fighters fought the other good fighters, and he stopped me. He said, why would you want to get rid of the last vestige of pure capitalism in sports, right? And it was such a great line, but I never thought about applying that to things that used to be, you know, what we used to refer to almost maybe blindingly as amateur sports, right? Because it was never amateur at some of these schools. I mean, we used to talk about the schools that would hire these players in the offseason, and all of a sudden they were driving sports cars and all these. So, I mean, that always existed, but there was at least a fig leaf of oversight. It's the Wild West now, and what Charlie Steiner had said about boxing is quickly becoming true for college football.
Have you been to campuses? Have you been to games? I mean, I think you're absolutely right in that the kernel or the core of the sport is the tradition, is the unique quality of going to a game or just being a Virginia Tech fan, being a Texas fan, being and just how different it is. Those experiences are both watching it in person. Have you tailgated in the South or the Midwest or elsewhere on the West Coast? What is your experience with not college football games per se, but college football traditions in person?
Well, like I said, I have zero interest in what goes on in the Southeast Conference, for example. But I saw Colorado lose to Minnesota live live last year, 30-0. I saw them lose to USC live at Folsom Field last year. So I went to two games at Folsom last year, both disasters as has become lately the Colorado template, unfortunately. But yeah, I was and to be honest, and unfortunately, if my friends at Colorado who made that possible for me or listening, I would have rather watched both on television because I feel like I would have seen better what was going on. But yes, yeah, so I do go to these things and I do enjoy. And by the way, I also saw Oregon, Colorado here in Eugene and was part of the tailgating and all that. So I definitely take part in all that.
What does the future look like for Colorado football? You've mentioned Colorado a lot here.
that underpins what we've been saying, right? You care about your team, right?
How do we feel about Colorado this year?
Oh, it's ugly. And it's ugly for what we talked about earlier, because even when we get a good player and coach him up, then they leave. Somebody's got to figure out two things. One, the transfer portal's got to be fixed, if only because coaches have no way to plan. I mean, how do you plan on, okay, I'm filling in the gaps on my team when the holes and then they leave? I mean, that's, you know, I the sitting out a year thing maybe should come back, or a once a transfer thing, or they got to figure that out, because otherwise it's worse than free agency. And so the Colorado situation is going to be really tough. That's the only way I could say. And fan support, I think, is tougher too. When you take the part that makes you live and die for the program, I mentioned the Nebraska games earlier because I hadn't felt that way in years. That's what makes you say, okay, I can't ever leave this behind because it makes me feel like nothing else makes me feel, right? but when you change conferences and you get rid of traditional rivalries and all these things, it doesn't make me feel like that anymore. Then why are you going to live and die? And if you're on a limited income budget, as 90% of the world is, are you really going to spend all that money to go to the games and go to the tailgate? I mean, all of this is based on that feeling. And that feeling is, you know, if you're a Washington fan at the University of Washington, you don't get that feeling from watching the Iron Bowl. You just don't. And so I do feel like the future of Colorado football depends on what the future of most of these programs depends on, the love of the game and what it does for you. And if you kill that, you kill the foundation that's kept college football what it is for more than a century.
What is the Dan Carlin Saturday game day tradition? You mentioned college football is a TV sport. You're watching the game at home. What are you eating? How are you watching the game? Do you have any superstitions?
Do you have a lucky shirt?
A lucky shirt, a jersey. Like,
I have unlucky shirts. I throw these shirts. So the tradition at this house is we'll have game day on first thing in the morning. The teams that get rooted for around here are Colorado, Oregon State, and Washington State. So you're waiting to see Lee Corso and the gang bring up your schools or something that is relevant. So for example, they may talk about SC or Washington, but that's still relevant to us. And you don't pay as much attention when they're off talking about something in a part of the country you don't care about anymore, right? So our game day tradition is waiting for them to talk about the parts of the game that are relevant and that get you motivated, right? I want to hear the breakdown of how the game that I'm waiting to watch is going to turn out, right? Or the latest news on injuries or whatever it might be. And that again speaks to the fact that this is a regional sort of a sport, and trying to turn it into a national one is going to kill the very things that make everybody so excited. Unless you happen to be, again, some of these programs here, I would love to find out what somebody at Alabama, and I keep saying Alabama because they've been, you know, in the top three for so many years now, they may have a different opinion about this, just like my stepdad wanted SC to be playing only Alabama and only Ohio State. So it may be very different for them. But when you're talking about more than 100 Division I, and I use old terms, I'm sure it's, you know, FCS, but more than 100 Division I schools, if you take out 10 of those schools, the rest of the people are all kind of in the same boat, right? Yeah. Not only is Colorado not going to sniff a national championship again, but the team we shared it with, Georgia Tech, isn't either. I mean, how is that? How is it good for the sport to have the same 5 or 6 or 7 teams out of more than 100 always the ones that share the top trophy? I can't think that it wouldn't be good for baseball if it was only the Yankees and the Dodgers every single year, which it almost is. So, I mean, I feel like not realizing that you have more than 100 teams and that those 100 teams all contribute to the whole is part of what, you know, I keep coming back to the same. We're killing the golden goose here.
My final question for you is, you mentioned that you sometimes happen upon message boards.
Every day, but you know, sometimes.
So Dan Carlin message board lurker, or message board lurker with a burner handle that does not identify him personally?
I'm a lurker who, it's funny, I only post when things are awful, right? So when something terrible happens, yep, all of a sudden I appear and I'm just like, because normally I like have questions, right? I'll say, oh my God, this is a disaster. When things are going good, I'm definitely a lurker. When things are going bad, then I've had one account on one site for, God, more than a decade, and I think I've got like, you know, 12 posts or 15 posts, but they're all, if you looked at them, they're all in moments of disaster and heartache.
That, I think we're going to make a shirt out of that. I only post when things are awful.
You'll hear from me when the world is falling apart, yes.
That's, if nothing else encapsulates college football, that's it.
Oh my, yeah, God. And it's hatreds. True. I mean, that's the part you've heard. Hatreds.
It's absolutely true. Yeah, yeah. I can tell you all of the fan, or not the fan bases. I don't really care that much about fan bases, but it feels so good as an Oregon fan that Oregon has beaten Washington, whatever, 17 out of 19 years. I bathe in that. It feels so great. And
if you didn't play them, so this is, you hit the nail on the head. If you didn't play them anymore,
yeah,
right? If you moved to, this is like, I'm supposed to hate Utah. I don't hate Utah. I don't even, but you don't get the same adrenaline rush. If we're playing Nebraska, all of a sudden, like when we played them the last few times and beat them both times, I'm going to say, in the midst of horrible CU seasons, nothing, I remember thinking, okay, I used to feel this way every year on the day after Thanksgiving when we played them, right? That Friday, the day afterwards. And all of a sudden, it reminded me what I loved about the sport. And I get that feeling so rarely now. So the idea that I'm going to get that feeling less and less and less, to me, is a disaster, especially when you're down to one last sport, and it's my favorite sport, and you're killing it. And it just drives me crazy that we have so little input and so little say. And I feel bad for the schools, because it is like a game of musical chairs. And if you're an AD at one of these schools, your number one job right now is to make sure you don't get left out of a conference or get left out of a top conference. I get it, but boy, I do think that the fans once again are the people being left behind here, and whose opinions seem to count for nothing.
Yeah, as an Oregon fan, my initial reaction was, how does Oregon get to the Big Ten and become part of whatever big time college football will become? And then I thought to myself, I don't care about beating Indiana. I don't care about beating Penn State, as fun as it is that Ty went to Penn State and I went to Oregon. I don't care about beating, you know, I mean, Oregon just beat Ohio State last year, so I can check off that box. I don't need anything more there. And it's just, I have no personal connection. And I want, you know, I talked about this on the show, that like, all I want to do is beat USC and Washington every year. That's the most important thing. I grew up with people who went to USC and UCLA. My brother went to Washington. That, to me, it's not just winning, it's who you're beating, it's who you're upsetting, it's whose season you're spoiling. And I think you're right, and I've been talking about that on the show, that college football is immensely personal, and when you make it about market size and ratings, You're just turning it into a spreadsheet sport, which is not the point.
Well, wait till the TV networks and the conference tells you that Oregon's new rival's Rutgers. Enjoy that.
Oh my God. At least I have family in New Jersey. I can get good pizza. But other than that, I have no interest.
But you see what I'm saying? That's what they did with Utah. They said, Utah's your new rival. You can't just say that. That's not how it works.
It's true. I completely agree.
Hate takes a long time to develop.
It does. It really does.
You have a history, don't you? That gets back to, you have to have a history with these people.
There it is. It comes full circle.
That's right.
We do need to ask you what you're working on, what folks can expect next from Dan Carlin in the podcasting sphere. I know people are always waiting with bated breath for whatever you drop next. Do you have any projects you'd like to share with us?
We've been a little. I've had life intervene lately, and so we're a little behind. But we should have something on our Hardcore History Addendum feed by the end of the month. And I'm working on the big show as usual. So we're getting a scorching 2.5 shows out a year of the big show. So the big show will be out probably, I don't know, October, November, something like that. But we should have something by the end of July on the HHA feed.
All right. Well, that's all wonderful. Thank you so much for all of your time. We hope you'll come back soon.
You guys are nice to listen to my rantings. I appreciate it.
And
thanks to your audience for listening to an ignorant, vindictive, middle-aged man talk about what he's missing in the sport.
That's why we brought you here.
That's why we brought you
here. Getting into.
I have vindictiveness. We'll travel.
Dan Carlin, Hardcore History, thank you so much for your time, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciate it.
All right, Dan, there you go. Mr. Dan Carlin, Hardcore History, go and check him out. I'm curious if I'm doing a heat check between his take on conference realignment and your take on conference realignment. Who hates it more?
So he has been the quote unquote, and I'm just quoting myself, the victim twice, because he loved rooting against Nebraska in the Colorado-Nebraska matchup, and now he doesn't care about Utah, but now he's seeing Colorado in its current conference iteration get demoted to whatever we're going to consider West Coast football and Pac-10-12 football moving forward. So he goes a little bit further back and has more baggage, though I do this for a living. And so it affects my emotions on a more professional level than it does for him. I don't know, man. Because I'm so tied, intertwined with this all year long, it's probably me who gets more worked up about this stuff. I'm the one who has to think about something to talk about and something to spin, you know, come February, come May, come August, whatever. So it's probably me, but I thought he brought the heat.
He brought that heat. He did deliver. We appreciate Mr. Carlin for stopping on by, being so generous with his time again. Check out Hardcore History if you haven't yet. Hopefully you have.
Yeah.
But as I said at the top, all-time Rushmore of podcasts and podcast hosts.
Can I ask you something?
Yes, please.
You're an only child, as far as you know. Confirmed?
As far as I know, yes.
As far as you know, you're an only child.
Correct.
And you've talked about on previous shows, maybe they were on the Brew and A shows, the Patreon-only verballers.com Q&A show. Maybe you revealed it on that show. You had like all of the gaming consoles growing up, right?
I did, yep.
You were
yep.
a spoiled only child.
I was spoiled, but not a brat. Is how
correct.
I like to characterize
That's how I've interpreted it, having met and heard from Mama H. I think she raised you right.
Thank you. That's great.
Did you own, because they were not cheap, they were not inexpensive, did you own Reebok pumps?
I don't think I ever had a Reebok pump phase, no.
Okay. Because that's a nice threshold. That's a nice line in the sand. Because what I'm seeing right now is the SEC and the Big Ten as the Reebok pumps. They're the kids that have the cash to buy that premium. I don't know how much they were, $100, whatever it was back then as an expensive shoe purchase.
Yeah.
And then you could be the Big 12. You could be the Pac-12 and be like, well, they're not Reeboks, but I got the LA Gear pumps.
Got some Airwalks.
They have pump action. No. LA Gear. Yeah. You can look up LA Gear.
No, I'm familiar. Believe me.
Okay. Shortly after Reebok pump released their pumps, LA Gear released their more express version, their version of the pumps that were more affordable. And I just get the feeling that as an LA Gear pump owner, that sure, it was cool to have that pump on your shoe tongue, but there is a difference. Yeah. There is a difference in being a Reebok pump owner and an LA Gear pump owner. And we're all freaking out about who's going to own the biggest and brightest LA Gears.
Did we ever find out, by the way, what the ergonomic advantage was to the Reebok pump? Because I feel like I put them on at one point or another in my life and I pumped them all the way up. It didn't necessarily add to the comfort level.
I suppose it was air surrounding your... I have no idea. I have no idea. Extra cushioning? Like the cushion was supposed to inflate with it? I have no concept.
Somebody look that up. SolidVerbal@gmail.com is the email. Let us know what the deal was with that. But no, I think we're headed towards a battle of the pumps, Dan. That's what you're going for, right?
Right. Well, so we've got the Reebok conferences and we've got the LA Gear conferences, coincidentally enough, without the LA teams. And so,
oh my gosh,
it's tough, man. It's a tough position. But ultimately, I still was able to cross over a bunch of those pumpers. So I'm good.
So here is the deal. SolidVerbal.com is the website if you want to head on out and check out any of our old stuff. But if not, that's cool. Just hit subscribe. As we said at the top, we're going to be doing a lot more college football content as the season draws nearer. We are starting up our preview content next week. We will do that for 10 straight episodes, taking you all the way through into mid-August. We've got live shows, which we would urge you to check out. Just go to solidverballive.com. We're going to be stopping by your neck of the woods, actually, Chicago, at the end of August, where we're going to do our Fantasy Things show, which is our favorite live show concept. I love doing that at Beat Kitchen in Chicago. SolidVerballive.com is where you can go for more info on that. And Verballers.com, as you just mentioned a few seconds ago, Verballers.com is our Patreon. If you want to support the show, if you want to get some bonus perks, that is where you can find it. I believe that's all I got, Dan.
I'm waiting and waiting to just talk about football. That's all I want.
Take the music off, please. I hate that music.
I know. It's the best.
I worked in corporate America. I heard so much of it. For that guy over there, my good friend Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildebrand, thanks so much for downloading, for listening, for playing along at home. We'll be back next week. In the meantime, as always, stay solid.
Peace.